Chapter 1. The Eternal Sea. Arian Zorzi stood on the Vesalius's command deck and watched reports flicker across the hololithic readouts. The lower decks and corridors echoed with weapons fire and the cries of the injured. Alarm klaxons and proximity alerts wailed, adding to the omnipresent cacophony. Warning lights bathed entire decks in dull crimson tones as the crew went to war with itself. The croaking voices of the servitors wired into the majority of the stations merged into a monotonous susurrus. His teeth itched with annoyance as he parsed the droning updates.
Sealing bulkhead on B deck. Arming internal defensive array. Alert, alert, alert.
Damn them, the apothecary murmured, without any particular rancor. Their sense of timing is unfortunate. He glanced at his companion.
Wouldn't you say, Sakara?
I'd say it is excellent, Sakara Thresh said. They seized their moment with impeccable haste. I would congratulate them, were circumstances different.
Arian chuckled mirthlessly.
What's stopping you?
Sakara looked at him. Arian laughed. The two were a study in contrast, for all that they were both space marines. Arian was the larger of the two. While his power armor might once have been the blue and white of the 12th Legion, the pitted plates of ceramite were now almost all a uniform bare grey, where they were not stained a dull reddish-brown. A sextet of cracked and yellowing skulls hung artfully arranged from his chest plate, wreathed in chains, their cortical implants dangling like some barbaric tabard. More chains covered his torso and arms, as if he sought to keep something within himself securely contained. Beneath these chains, he bore the accoutrements of his rank, including an ancient Narthesium, the runnels of its diamond-tipped drill caked in dried blood. Sakara, on the other hand, had never been an apothecary, or anything close. There was not, so far as Arian was aware, an official designation for what the word-bearer was. What did you call one who wielded demons the way another might use a blade? Other than unpleasant. Livid suture scars marked the word-bearer's exposed flesh, following the curve of his skull and the tight line of his jaw. He was clad in battered crimson power armor. The plates were covered in line upon line of cramped, curling script, where they were not adorned with blasphemous iconography or fluttering streamers of brittle parchment. The helmet, magnetically clamped to his belt, was similarly marked. Strange bottles of clay and glass hung from his armor, each one sealed with wax and marked with warding sigils. Within them, the indistinct shapes of captive Neverborn coiled and slithered, impatient for release. Sakara idly stroked the bottles as he studied the readouts alongside Arian.
Nervous, Sakara?
Arian continued, not looking at the word-bearer.
Afraid that today is the day you finally meet those gods you so cherish?
No, Sakara said flatly. Death is the greatest gift the gods can bestow.
Really? You've never seemed all that eager to accept it before now?
Arian turned.
Has something changed, or have you simply grown a spine at long last?
The jibe was half-hearted. In truth, Sakara was no more a coward than Arian himself. Fanatical, egotistical, annoying, certainly, but a coward? No. These days, the accusation did not even make him bridle, as it might once have done. Instead, Sakara simply laughed.
Perhaps you are the one who is nervous, Arian. His death, his final death, would confer a most horrid freedom upon you, would it not, warhound?
Arian frowned.
He is not dead.
No? Then where is he?
The word-bearer looked at him.
What would you do, I wonder, with no master to trot behind? Would you at last embrace the destiny of all your misbegotten brotherhood and sink into the red warmth of Khorne's affections?
Arian studied him, palms resting on the pommels of the twin phalanx blades sheathed at his waist.
There is no Khorne, Hierophant, no Slaanesh.
only opposing natural forces, and the fools who ascribe them greater purpose than they deserve." The words sounded hollow, even to him. He lacked the chief apothecary's certainty.
"And more than that, dog brother, you have neither the wit nor wisdom of your master."
"Harsh, brother," Arian murmured, tapping Breus's skull in warning. His dog brother was the most vocal of the dead, as he had been in life.
"You lost the right to chastise me for lack of wisdom the day you took your first step on the eightfold path."
Arian alone of his cohort had never made obeisance before the skull throne. Though the butcher's nails sparked and snarled within his mind, a strict regimen of chemical carmatives kept the worst of the pain at bay. Occasionally, he allowed himself to overdose, just to see what it was like on the other side of madness. But never too often. A little pain was good. It kept his feet to his chosen path. He needed that focus now, perhaps more so than ever before. Only a focused mind had hope of navigating the current situation. The coup had not been unexpected. Sudden, yes, fierce, but not unforeseen. Such was the nature of the traitor legions. Treachery was in their very name, and nestled in every heart, whatever loyalties they might profess. They were the cast-off remnants of the greatest army to ever stalk the stars, and they had shared the ancient, instinctive discipline that once guided them, as eagerly as they had their oaths to the Emperor. Just because something is foreseen does not mean that it can be countered easily. This particular uprising was akin to a recurrent inflammation, swelling slowly over the course of years and months, only to shrink and rise again. They, the chief apothecary rather, had collected the pitiful remnants of the 12th millennial Third Legion several centuries earlier, in the aftermath of the Lugonath raid. In the intervening decades, the 100 or so Emperor's children left to the cohort had made themselves useful. An army, even a small one, came in handy in I-space. But their dissatisfaction had grown steadily once their exultation at survival wore off. Occasionally, one or two might try something, mostly out of boredom, but little came of it. This, however, was not some display of hedonistic rebellion. This time, they wanted the ship and everything on it. If the chief apothecary had been here, but he wasn't. Arian took a calming breath. By rights, he should have been in the ship's apothecarium, overseeing the necessary procedures. Instead, he was forced to deal with a band of petulant sybarites, his only allies, the crew and his fellow apothecaries. And Sakara, of course. The thought made him smile. A miniaturized fragmentation detonator, keyed to the chief apothecary's brain activity, had been surgically implanted in the word-bearer's skull. So long as Fabius Bile's mind was functional, so was Sakara. It provided quite the incentive, and Sakara was nothing if not a born survivor. The crunch of heavy ceramite boots on the steps leading up to the command deck alerted him to the arrival of another survivor. One, sadly, less biddable than Sakara.
"Well, any word?" the newcomer demanded.
Skala Grim Farr was bareheaded, his scarred features hidden beneath a wide tangle of grey-streaked hair and beard. Worn and faded Chthonian glymph markings had been etched into his black battleplate. He had once served at Horus's pleasure, and then, later, as the master of the apothecarian on Malium, before Fabius Bile had made him a better offer. When the Third had destroyed the fortress of Monument and carted away the remains of the Warmaster, Skarlagrim had accompanied them. That Skarlagrim had been so willing to throw over his brothers did not endear him to some among the consortium. Arian himself bore Skarlagrim no particular ill will at the moment, but neither did he trust him. One who turned once might well do so again, if it suited him. The Sons of Horus legionary was a scrambler, always looking for the next advantage, the next opportunity. Anything to stay one step ahead of those who wanted him dead, and his hearts offered up to the restless ghost of the Warmaster.
"Have they managed to sweep yet another deck clean of life?" Skarlagrim continued.
"No. So far they've contained their tantrum to below the gunnery decks. Nothing down there but monsters and their prey. There were whole tribes, kingdoms even, of mutants lurking in the deep places of the ship. They venerated the engines with a devotion equal to any Mechanicum acolyte, and waged bloody wars in service to the voices they heard within the omnipresent rumbling. Right now, he hoped that the engine gods were telling them to repel the purple-clad intruders who stalked their kingdom of creaking gantries and rust.
"You should let me go down there and kill them, Warhound," Skarlagrim said, scratching one tattooed cheek. "I will pry the valuable bits from their battle plate first, of course. Waste not, want not, as our absent chieftain so often reminds us."
He patted the diamond-toothed chain axe nestled in the crook of one black-plated arm. While he wore the accoutrements of an apothecary, he preferred to perform surgery in the Chthonian fashion, bloodily and sloppily. Arian looked at the former reaver.
"If I unleash you, they may well kill you," he said. "Perhaps not immediately, but soon enough. And then I will be one warrior short when I might need you most."
"And when will that be?" Skarlagrim looked around the command deck. "When will we strike back at them? Or are you content to allow them to pillage our ship at their leisure?"
"Our ship?"
Skarlagrim snorted.
"Fine. His ship. But he is dead and we are alive, and I would like to keep it that way. And that means
following my orders, brother. I'm in command while the chief apothecary is indisposed."
"Dead," Skarlagrim said.
"Not dead enough,"
Sakara interjected. He tapped the side of his skull.
"If he were, I would be as well, remember?"
He smiled nastily.
"Though, given who you've left in charge of the apothecarian, he might well be soon enough."
A quiet cough wiped the smile from the word-bearer's face. Arian turned, feeling something akin to relief.
"Igori, you yet live. He will be pleased when he awakens."
"All I do in his name, honored Arian,"
the old woman said, as she strode onto the command deck, surrounded by her kin, lovers, and children.
"It's a veritable family affair,"
Skarlagrim barked, baring his teeth at the newcomers. A normal human would have cowered in fear. These returned the gesture. Though they looked human, they were not, or rather, they were the epitome of the human, the apex of the species, wrought from raw flesh by the hands of the one they called benefactor. Dland hounds, angel hunters, devils incarnate by any other name. The pale, malformed members of the Vesalius's crew were scattered before them, like vermin before hungry felids. And the hungriest of them all was their matriarch, Igori. She was old now, her hair the colour of ice, her skin tight over muscle and bone, all excess flesh carved away by time's passage. She still wore the battered fatigues and battle armour that had carried her through the corkscrew streets of Sublime and the wraithbone corridors of Lugonath, still wore her necklace of Adeptus Astartes' teeth, heavier now, with new additions, click-clacking against her chest. Her hand rested on the Eldar shuriken pistol thrust through her belt as she stopped before Arian. She tossed off a lazy salute.
"We have collected 3 more glands, cousin," she said, smiling.
She spread her long, muscular arms.
3 more false warriors dead, to be reborn by his hand in more pleasing shapes."
Her pack set up an ululation at her words, a primal shriek of joy that set the beast within Arian snarling. Not in pleasure, but in warning. He studied them through hooded eyes, noting the enhanced musculature, the chiseled, too perfect features, like statues come to life. Though these statues were dressed in scavenged bits of battle plate and mismatched fatigues, rather than the finery of better days. Skarlagrim clapped.
"You do him proud, curs. But shouldn't you be in your kennel, growling over scraps? We are too busy to play with you at the moment."
Igori fixed him with a bland glare.
"We come to make our report to the master of the apothecarian. That you are here as well is irrelevant.
Skarlagrim grinned.
I could make it so, if you like.
He ran a thumb across the diamond teeth of his chain axe.
She will kill you, Arian said. They would pull you down in an instant and render you to your component parts. If that is how you wish to depart this life, do so elsewhere. I have a coup to put down.
He looked at Igori. Report.
We have herded them into the flesh market as you commanded. Most of them are there now. Safety in numbers. There are a few others scattered throughout the ship. My kin hunt these, as is our right. The others we have left to you, honored Arian.
Skarlagrim chuckled at the honorific. Arian ignored him. As the chief apothecary's equerry, the Dlandhounds afforded him a certain amount of respect. He had hunted alongside them more than once to satiate those urges that his chemical concoctions could not. Those occasions had taught him to respect the new men, as even their creator did not. The chief apothecary saw them as children, or worse, but Arian now knew that they were anything but. In the dark and the quiet, a new race had come into the universe. The first generations of new men had been made, augmentation by augmentation, trial and error. But now they needed no fleshcrafter's knife to grow their numbers. Igori was mother, aye, and grandmother to her successors. Her sisters and brothers, those few who had survived as long as she, were the same. One pack had split into two, two into four, four into eight. Now an army prowled the silent spaces of the Vesalius, awaiting the moment the command came, and they were unleashed to hunt their favoured prey.
Good,
he said, after a moment's consideration. In the silence, the dead voiced their opinion.
Good, he says. We are thirsty, brother. Will you let us drink?
Yes, he said, stroking the skulls of his brothers. Yes.
It was always best to have a consensus. He gestured.
Rouse the pack, Igori. The 12th millennial has outstayed its welcome.
He flexed his hands in anticipation, as his dead brothers whispered in satisfaction.
It is time to hunt.
Fabius Bile was dead. He had been dead before, and would be again. Such was the nature of the universe, and his place in it.
Death was not the end. Instead, for him, it was akin to an enforced rest, a period of quiet inactivity during which his mind turned in on itself, like some ancient mollusk seeking the safety of its shell. In death, he could explore the great storehouses of knowledge within himself at his leisure. It was almost a relief. Yet, beneath this relief was the sure and certain awareness that the universe would press on without him. That events would play out and spiral into unpredictable patterns, possibly endangering the work of ages. All for want of a steady hand and a firm mind. That, too, was the nature of the universe. The centre could not hold, and anarchy was ever one moment in the future. Inevitable and inexorable. Only by his will could it be held at bay. Or so he told himself, in quiet moments of indulgence. In truth, he knew that he could no more hold back the tide of entropy than a king might hold back the sea. Everything fell apart. Change was the only constant in an inconstant universe. It was a fire that would devour all things, leaving naught but ashes in its wake. But after every fire there came growth. What had once been could be again, stronger, hardier, better able to weather perennial cosmic conflagration. These were among the certainties that comforted Fabius in the grey stretch between death and life. He, his mind at least, the part of him that was still aware, despite the breakdown of his biological functions, wandered through corridors of stone and shadow. He could taste lightning and the stink of wet dog. Old memories, these, older than the man he was, squatting of the deepest depths of his psyche. He heard snatches of songs and the drip of voices, their words worn smooth and unintelligible by time. As he wandered, he wondered. How had he died this time? Not through violence, he thought. Those deaths left a mark, a red haze over the grey. No, his body had simply given out. They did so with more regularity these days, consumed from within by a blight beyond even his capacity to eliminate. A mote on the heart of eternity, eating it inside out. Once, the blight had been the Aleph of his existence. It nestled within the gene seed of the Emperor's children, flourishing unseen until the moment it began to devour its host. Only by his efforts had it been prevented from utterly obliterating the Third Legion in the early days of the Great Crusade. Even so, they'd been whittled down to scarce 200 in number. Then had come Fulgrim and the infusion of fresh, untainted gene seed. Or so they'd thought. But the blight was as hardy as the warriors it afflicted. It had rallied, spreading through the new recruits like a scouring flame, despite his best efforts. He felt a sudden weariness, as if his thoughts were wrapped in heavy chains. His first failure, and his greatest, the echoes of which still haunted him. As far as he knew, he was the last sufferer of that scourge. Perhaps it was because he was the last of his legion as yet untainted by the touch of the warp. Cursed by his own purity, a cruel jest, but then the universe knew no other kind. He laughed bitterly, the sound of it echoing strangely in this place of dreams and nightmares. The echoes of that laugh stretched, joining present and past. He followed the sound, tracing his way through his memories. Ghosts swept past him, their faces blurred. He'd known them once, but with every passing century, every death and rebirth, he lost a bit more of who he had been. A mind was not an infinite storehouse, whatever some claimed. Soon he might not even remember where this place had been, or what. He stopped and reached up to touch his head. It had begun to ache, a sure sign that his time here was coming to an end. Even here, pain brought clarity. As he rubbed his skull, he caught sight of a familiar face among the wandering ghosts, one that was not blurred. It was as sharp and as vivid as the day they'd met. An old face. The face of a man who had never been young. He could not recall the old man's name. Perhaps he hadn't had one. That was always a possibility with the lower gene castes. They consoled themselves with nonsensical designations, assorted numbers and letters that meant little outside the meat creches of their creation. The old man had served his family as a retainer, a horse leech, Fabius thought, though he did not recall his family owning any horses. He had been stooped and thin, but powerful, like a tree hardening even as it withered, with a face like a knothole and lank, greying hair that tumbled about his hunched shoulders like smoke. What stuck most in the memory were his hands. Artificial, archaic, ancient, clicking, spidery things, skeletal and unnerving in their eerie grace. A triumph of biomechanics. He had made such curious toys with those hands, that old man. Silvery spheres that hummed gently as they carved strange patterns on the air. The tiny homunculi, made from clockwork and wood, that waged mock war at a single twitch from one cybernetic finger. But most wondrous of all were his chimeras, scaly cats with stinger-tipped tails, and bipedal dogs clad in specially tailored finery were among the most common, but there were others, each more monstrous than the last, more beautiful. The old man had taught him much about the arts of meat and blade, how to stretch muscle and reshape bone for the sheer joy of creation, how to dull pain and increase pleasure so that his creations did not writhe unnecessarily beneath the knife. The memories flowed strongly now, vivid and sharp, just like the old man's knives. Using these lessons, Fabius had trained a selection of white mice to dance and to duel for the amusement of his parents. Dressed in minuscule finery, they mimicked the blood feuds of the great houses of Europa. tiny blades clicked in a skillful rhythm as he practiced his latest routine. One mouse drew blood on another, and the wounded rodent squealed and launched itself at its attacker, teeth bared. Even then, he felt the flash of frustration and anguish as his creations tore each other apart in a bestial frenzy. No matter how much he screamed or activated the tiny control nodes he'd implanted in them, they would not heed him. And so they died, again and again. Though he'd shed few tears, and only in private, he had been inconsolable. Only the old man had thought to even attempt it. Then, what else could one expect of such a low-born creature?
"Do you know why you failed, boy?"
A grating voice, that, like the scrape of a spade through dry soil. One finger reached out to prod a tiny corpse clad in silks and ruffles.
"The beast flesh. The stubborn beast flesh, boy. It creeps back. It always comes back. No matter how much flesh you strip away or alter, you cannot change the soul of a thing."
The man's cybernetic hand clenched, sparks dripping from the clicking joints. A metal digit dug painfully into his chest.
"And only the soul matters in the end."
The boy he had been nodded, knowing the wisdom of those words, even at such a tender age. A good lesson. And, as it turned out, the final one. A day later, he left home to join the rest of the flesh tithe, bound for the Terran holdings of what would become the Third Legion. A children's crusade, bound for a land and a life less than holy. A land where the old man's lessons had served him well, as they still did. The old man, the room, himself, it all began to fade then. The ache grew into a sharp pain. He touched his face, and fingers came away red. "At last," he murmured. Fabius awoke from his dreams of the past to find a diseased gargoyle looking down at him. Not the most pleasant of sights, nor the one he'd expected.
"I have asked you not to stand so close to me, Korag, especially when I have open wounds." "My apologies, Chief Apothecary. Your physiognomy fascinates me."
Korag Singe stepped back. The pallid, weathered plates of his ancient cataphracti tactical dreadnought armor rustled like loose flesh.
"Still, the sleeper awakens," he wheezed,
clouds of miasmic incense billowing up from the cracked vents and ruptured hoses of his helmet.
"Mind intact, then? All neurons firing correctly, are they?"
A slobbering sigh.
"Good. Good."
Korag was one of the few remaining apothecaries of the 14th Legion. Nurgle's Chosen rarely needed medical treatment of any description, and the former Grave Warden had abandoned his brothers and the services of Callus Typhon to travel down darker avenues of research as a member of Fabius's consortium.
"You performed the operation,"
Fabius said, somewhat shakily.
"You?"
The thought of those diseased fingers prying about inside his skull sent a chill through him. There was no telling what sort of effluvia was even now floating within him.
"At a safe distance, Chief Apothecary, I assure you. I operated through the gentle hands of your hounds."
A thick paw gestured to several attentive gland hounds. They stood nearby, watchfully.
"Quite deft, these children of yours." "Say grandchildren, or great-grandchildren, rather."
Fabius peered at one, a callow youth, but already heavy with altered muscle and covered in scars. They started early down in the kennels.
"One of Igoris?"
he asked as he sat up.
"Yes, benefactor," the youth murmured.
He glanced down and quickly stepped aside as several stunted hooded shapes squirmed between the landhounds. The little creatures, in their heavy robes and hissing rebreathers, clustered about the examination table Fabius lay strapped to. With simian swiftness, they scrambled across the table, loosening the straps and unhooking the biometric sensors. They gurgled and chirped as they worked, and he stroked the sloped skull of one with affection. The Vatborn looked alike, sounded alike, and even smelled alike. The tiny mutants might as well have been stamped from a mould, despite being several hundred generations removed from the nutrient vats he'd grown their ancestors in. They bred like vermin in out-of-the-way places. He was perversely proud of them. They were hardy, loyal little beasts.
"Hello, my friends," he murmured.
He looked at the Glandhound, studying the barcode tattooed on his cheek.
"You are Nihalos, yes? Bring me my panoply, Nihalos."
As the Glandhounds hastened to obey, Fabius swung his legs off the examination table. He looked around, refamiliarizing himself with his apothecarium, his laboratorium, his sanctum. The chamber was a circular knot of alternating antechambers and open space. Magnetized trays of surgical tools, not all of them designed by human hands, occupied the walls in seemingly haphazard fashion. Nestled among these gleaming racks were diverse charts documenting the progress of ongoing experiments, as well as his observations on such. Enhanced pic captures of unique nerve clusters framed scraps of poetry collected from a thousand worlds. Beneath this detritus lay the progenoid biovaults, which paid for his safe passage through the more conflicted regions of I-space, and a variety of material storage cylinders. A chill mist emerged from the refrigeration units built into the deck, curling across the floor, the cold causing the various hololithic projectors mounted about the central chamber to flicker with static. Vatborn scurried back and forth through the mist, taking diagnostic readings and recalibrating the various machines.
"All is just as you left it," Korag assured him. "Why you? Where is Arian? Where are the others?" "Ah, well, it seems in your absence that there has been a bit of a breakdown in discipline. They are attempting to restore order."
Fabius rubbed his face. It was younger than he was used to, firmer. His hair was thick, long and pale. It would be gone soon enough. It was inevitably the first thing to go. He caught sight of his distorted reflection in the edge of the examination table. There was much of Fulgrim in that face, a tad sharper, perhaps, less perfect, the aquiline beauty giving way to an almost vulpine savagery, the beast flesh creeping back. He pushed away from the table and dropped to the deck. He stretched, feeling the strength in his new muscles. It was good to be strong again, if only for a little while. Somewhere, alarm klaxons were sounding. The ship. He was on his ship. The recent past returned to him in fits and starts, flickering picked captures that spun and stretched across his mind's eye. He had collapsed, not from combat, but simple overexertion. A straw death. He chuckled. No death was a good death. Death simply was. Behind him, something hissed.
"It has missed you, I think," Korag said.
He sounded uneasy.
"If such a thing can be said to feel separation anxiety, I suspect it is that damnable machine."
The spider-scorpion shape of the chirurgeon twitched eagerly in its rack. The arachnid-like assembly of blades, saws, and syringes writhed, its spinal contact nodes dripping with an oily solution. He had designed the complex Medicae harness himself in the first years of his apprenticeship in the Apothecarian. But now, almost a millennium removed from those more innocent days, the chirurgeon had developed a proto-will of its own. It was not truly sentient, he thought, but it was aware in some way, as if it had evolved somehow. Its machine spirit was as complex as its multifarious functions. It was programmed to learn, though he had begun to think that it kept most of what it learned to itself.
"Then we all must have our secrets, eh?"
He went to the rack and turned.
"Come, my friend. We have been apart too long."
He grunted in momentary discomfort as the harness latched onto him with preternatural strength. The dermal nodes hissed as they sealed themselves tight, and thin articulated hoses and neurofiber bundles slid home in subdermal contact ports. Bone clamps pierced his flesh and carapace to latch on to the vertebral column. Fibrous filaments emerged from the clamps and insinuated themselves through specially installed apertures in his spinal canal to sink into the nervous tissue of the spinal cord. The chirurgeon purred in pleasure as its dim awareness brushed against his own. It was as pleased to be reunited as he was. After so long, he felt incomplete without the harness. He wondered briefly if it felt the same. He looked at Korag.
"You mentioned a breakdown," he asked finally.
"A coup, Chief Apothecary,"
Korag chuckled wetly.
"It seems they want the ship and your head. Not necessarily in that order."